switch gears a bit. You mentioned in your book some of the laws and that that impact this, and you discuss that the Supreme Court's 2011 interpretation of China's marriage law, and you basically argue that this interpretation, which in cases of divorce only allocates property to those whose name is on the deed, absent some exceptions, denies women even more rights in the property market. I guess, can you give a little bit more background on this interpretation, and also, do you have any background on what caused the Supreme People's Court to issue this interpretation?
Yeah. So effectively, the marriage law was originally a real cornerstone of the Communist Revolution, and it gave women rights to property, the right to divorce, all sorts of new rights. And over the years, actually, women's rights to common marital property were strengthened. But in 2011, with this new judicial interpretation, effectively, if the woman is unable to prove through legal financial receipts that she put in a certain amount of money towards buying the home, she's not entitled to that home in the event of a divorce. None of the women that I interviewed kept any receipts of their financial contributions to the homes. And moreover, money is fungible. So there are many ways in which women's, if they're working women working for pay, there are many ways in which their pay is supporting the household.
Right.
And the man's money may be going directly to paying off the mortgage, so there's a receipt that for the man's contribution to the home. This law is really detrimental to women's property rights. Now, what I've heard anecdotally, I wasn't specifically researching why the court issued this new judicial interpretation, but what I've heard anecdotally from some lawyers is that the court was deluged with letters from parents of men who wanted to protect their sons when they got married. They didn't want the wives of their sons to have any share in the home, because the parents tend to put up so much money to buying these homes for their own sons. And because of China's rapidly rising divorce rate, I've also heard that the court simply wanted to simplify divorce rulings, just get these cases through the court fast. And so, but it's been an incredibly controversial interpretation, and a lot of women across China are very upset about it. But there's no organized movement to protest it, because organizing protests is so difficult.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess in looking at the Supreme People's Court interpretation and how that has a negative impact on women, I mean, one of the things, though, that has happened recently is that there has been, I mean, China has had its first gender discrimination lawsuit in employment, and I mean, that seems like a positive development in terms of women's rights. So how do you gel the fact that in a country where the court can reject cases, so they allowed, obviously, this case to be heard, and even though it was settled, they did allow it, and it's been published in the newspaper. How do you gel that kind of a development with something like what's happening with the leftover women and the 2011 marriage law interpretation?
Well, I mean, Chinese society is certainly not static, and there are some legal successes. I mean, that gender discrimination lawsuit was very important, and it set an important precedent. But the fact is that there are so many other systemic ways in which women's rights and gains have been really reversed in the past two decades. And one successful lawsuit here or there doesn't fundamentally change the situation for the vast majority of women. Most notably, there is still no specific law on domestic violence, and feminist lawyers and activists have been lobbying for over a decade to pass a law and they've drafted the language. It's all ready, but it simply hasn't been passed.
To go back to that, because your book ends where you do discuss some individuals that are trying to change a little bit incrementally, but I have to admit that it didn't seem like there was going to be a lot of change from them, even though they're brave in what they're doing. I mean, it sounds like, based on what you say, you don't see a lot of change happening soon, but I mean, is that correct? Or if you do see any change, where do you see it coming from?
Yeah. I certainly don't see change coming from an organized nationwide women's rights movement, simply because the political atmosphere is just too severely oppressive for that to happen. But what does give me hope is that individual women can make choices in their own lives to avoid getting trapped in a very discriminatory system. For example, there are women in their late 20s who have told me that they refuse to ever get married because marriage is a bad institution for women in China. And they see this as an empowering choice. That doesn't mean that they are never going to have a lover or boyfriend, or maybe they're lesbian. But there are individual ways in which women can act to empower themselves. But once they enter the institution of marriage, it's very, very difficult. Marriage as an institution doesn't protect women's rights. Mm-hmm. So I actually see it's contrary to the myths that are spread by the propaganda, the state media, that single women in China are extremely miserable and lonely. I see the reverse, that single women are the ones who tend to do better. They may, you know, they don't have husbands holding them back, telling them what to do. They have a lot more freedom. Women who are married, if there's any problem at all in the marriage, they're extraordinarily vulnerable.
Right. And just in closing, I mean, your book is a fascinating book, and I do recommend it for everybody to read, especially if they really want to understand China today, women in China today. But why do you think the rest of the world should be paying attention to this issue, if at all?
Well, the thing is that let's put aside the issue of fair treatment for women. Obviously, women are being treated unfairly in China and being discriminated against. But as an economic issue, it's very important. China's obviously becoming increasingly a driver of global economic growth. And the fact that women are basically being told by the government that they should stop working so hard and return to the home is going to end up having very damaging long-term economic consequences for China. There's already a declining labor force participation among women, particularly in the cities, according to the latest census results. There's a dramatically widening gender income gap. And when women are hurt, these are the most talented women in the country. And if you're telling the most talented female workers in China to just, it's okay, just leave the workforce, that's going to hurt China's economy. And of course, if China's economic development is hurt, if it's destabilizing, that's going to affect the rest of the world. So it's something that the rest of the world should be interested in.
All right, well, I want to thank you again for spending time with China Law and Policy. And just so our readers know, Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China, that can be purchased at Amazon.com. Thank you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
This morning I woke, restless and heady, with blood pulsing.